Hello, folks. Welcome to Thanks for the Knowledge. This is FanBite's weekly news show, rounding up the headlines in games and entertainment in one handy podcast. I'm your host, head of FanBite Media, John Warren. I'm recording this on Friday afternoon on June 24th. This morning, Roe versus Wade was officially struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court, and many states' trigger laws took effect, including Kentucky, Missouri, that made abortion completely illegal in those states. Other states like Texas have a 30-day trigger ban. States like my state of Arkansas has a trigger ban, but it has to go through some legislation before that happens. That being said, the vibe of this one this week might be a little weird, might be a little different. I did have a chance to talk to Jeff Grubb over at Giant Bomb, as well as Imran Khan, about some of our biggest headlines of the week and their thoughts about this winter's game schedule. I want to start with that. And on the other side of that, we'll talk about some video games, but also tell you about, you know, my thoughts of what we should be doing to mobilize and do the best we can for reproductive rights in this country. So let's get to that conversation with Jeff Grubb and Imran Khan right now. Well, Hot Games Summer 2022 might be technically kind of coming to an end, but there are still some new tidbits of information that we should all discuss. I have two very special guests on the show today. One is, of course, news editor Imran Khan.
Hello.
And the other is a first timer for the FanBite Network. We're very, very excited to have him here from Giant Bomb. It's Jeff Grubb.
I'm coming for you, Imran. I'm going to get my title back.
I mean, to be fair, you're number three. So you have to presumably get through number two to get to me.
Yeah, so
he didn't have to. He just popped out of nowhere and just came out. And he like was on the side of the mat the whole time. I did all the work. And then you hit me with that out of nowhere. So,
yeah. So we have to talk about the elephant in the room. I mean, Imran did defeat Andy Cortez and Jeff Grubb in a triple threat match to become the number one games journalist. And
so what's the record there, Imran? Like what? Like one in four, one in five?
I'm actually pretty sure that was the first match.
I think it was because I watched KFW. I've been watching. I've watched probably like 60% of them, but I definitely watch 100% of them that Imran have been on. Sure. As I support, you know, I just support FanBite unconditionally in any sort of form, right? And I just kept. I'm like, man, Imran's getting the dog shit beat out of him every single week.
I'm like, they set his stats wrong or something.
That's what I asked. I was asking Imran, do they just like set your stats to shit? Because that's what it seems like. But the short king got the victory. I'm happy to have the trophy in our trophy case over here. It's great.
I'm doing the Brock Lesnar thing where I get the title and just don't wrestle ever again.
There you go. Just show for the pay-per-view like once a year.
Yeah, you got those the eight dates a year for 500 thousand a date or whatever.
The number one games journalist is the only one that gets paid.
Yeah,
that's right.
Well, I want to start with you, Jeff, just kind of like life stuff, if you will, because like you wrapped up at GamesBeat. You started as one of the core nine over at Giant Bomb. I think the stuff y'all are doing over there is awesome. I think it's been a really nice refresh and revamp, and obviously Jan and the existing crew over there have been amazing, but it's been great to see y'all. How's it going so far?
It's going really well. It's the kind of thing where I was always a fan of Giant Bomb, and even as someone who's a fan of it, I always thought of it as like kind of like a rock band, and like maybe the guitarist gets replaced every once in a while, but you know, the core of it's still a band. And then when this was happening very quickly, like Jan mentioned to me, like, we're thinking of like a sports franchise where, like, you know, eventually everyone leaves, but the spirit can stay the same, and we want to be a winning franchise. And like, when you explain that to me, I'm like, okay, this actually makes some sense. And that doesn't mean that people shouldn't be sad that their favorite player left. I get that. But we are going to do our best to, you know, get that ring and try to like put out content that people can feel really good about. And And I think that side of things, we're super confident in that because we're like almost running into this thing where it's like, we want to do so much. We have so many ideas. There's so much energy. Everyone wants to work on these things. Now we are in a position where we are recording two or three things at a time and putting up a lot of content in a day. And it's the reaction's been really pleasant, really nice, really kind. It's hard to remember a 180 on the internet from the Jeff Gerstmann leaving on Monday to announcing this stuff on a Tuesday.
Yeah.
And I think since then, I mean, people have like look, they've assessed the situation and like, this feels like actually what needed to happen for everybody.
Yeah.
Jeff is off doing his stuff, his solo stuff. And I've been watching that. I'm a Patreon subscriber to that. I love it. I think he is in his element there. I think the Nextlander guys have already established themselves as obviously this works for them. And the question was always going to be over, us over a giant bomb. And I think really quickly we put out some things that's like, okay, we are going to have a lot of game coverage, a lot of fun stuff to talk about with games. We're going to keep a few of our non-gaming stuff happening, but it's going to be a lot of games nonstop, and we're going to make that stuff as entertaining as possible. And it's really worked so far. Now, I mean, maybe we're in the honeymoon period, but I still think this is going to be something we can maintain for quite some time.
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely so far so good. You've had a lot of like really honest to God great like graphic design kind of overhauls.
So good,
really good stuff. So like the visual language of every show is amazing, and the vibes are great. So it's like I think y'all are doing really good work. I think you're right. The vibe between those 2 days is pretty wild. I was like. Yep. I was like, wow, but a lot of people on the website eulogizing this group that is not mm-hmm. dead. And I'm like, we don't have to eulogize stuff that's not dead. And then the next day it's like, yeah, see, like they had a plan. Like this came together really fast. And I want to talk about that because
please, yeah.
You just did a big move. And yeah. I don't think I've ever, and this is a huge compliment. I don't think I've ever seen anyone move and start working as fast as I think I've seen you do it. Like, yeah. That's fucking insane to me because if I move house, it is weeks before my office is set up and like ready right. to do stuff. So I'm very impressed by that.
No, thank you. I think that is just a byproduct of the way my brain works. All the stuff that is behind me is out of sight, out of mind
yeah.
when I'm doing the job. And so what I do is and really it's really hard for me to compartmentalize and organize stuff that is out of sight. And so what I could do is let me create an environment where I can put the things I need to focus on in front of me.
Yeah.
And then I can execute on that. And so that's the first thing I did is just like, okay, we're moving. I'll have like the laptop and stuff. I'll do a few shows from the hotel room. I can handle that. And then when we get to the house, I'll make sure I have like enough computers and stuff to be able to piece this together.
Yeah.
And then when the truck started arriving, I knew exactly what I needed to just like piece the studio together and make it happen. And that, I mean, there is like, we still have a million boxes in the garage. We have so much stuff to tell. I mean, my van broke down in Indiana. I still got to go pick that up. They are waiting to get a transmission from Nissan. Who knows when that's going to happen? There's like things to take care of. But when it's time to like do the show, I've set it up so it's very easy to just jump in. And it's then that's like me being in my element is that yeah. sort of stuff where I can just put it in front of me and execute. And so thanks for noticing. It means a lot that you pointed that out.
Fair enough. I still we moved into this house in October 2020. And the closet of my office is full of boxes that I think I threw things in.
Yes.
They were not organized mm-hmm. at all. Couldn't tell you yep. what's in them. And I may never open them again. So
yeah, I mean, my office closet has two boxes that are just like there. Like, I don't know what's in them at this point. It's no been months. Idea. Like,
and that's the good part about the getting like packing up is this thing where you have to fit an infinite amount of work into like yeah. a handful of days.
Yeah.
And then getting to the place and unpacking is like, having like, okay, this, you could probably get this done in about a week or two, and then you take an infinite amount of time and you never actually finish that project. That's the nice part of that mm-hmm. unpacking. So
yeah.
I'm fine with that. There are boxes that are going to go in that closet over that I'm pointing to over here to my left, and they're just going to remain in there probably forever because we're not moving again. I'm never moving again. This is it.
it's funny, Jeff, that you mentioned the quick turnaround of news because mm-hmm. on the Friday before, I was reading GamesBeat for news as mm-hmm. I do when the Dean Takahashi's like weekly yes. Dean Beat comes out. I was scrolling through it, and at the bottom, it's like, oh yeah, Jeff Grubb's going to Giant Bomb. And I was like, what? And then I refreshed, and that part was gone. I'm like, Dean Takahashi, are you gaslighting me? What's happening here?
I was, so Dean asked me if he could like say that I was leaving. And I'm like, yeah, of course, that we need to, I understand, because look, all this stuff is happening, and like I'm only tangentially involved in like the giant bomb side of it at this point. But I understand that like something is going on where Jeff needs to leave, and they're going to try to have this really quick refresh. And they're like, hey, we need these clips for this video. And I even like that first meeting was like, hey, we want to do a video and reintroducing this stuff. And we came up with a bunch of ideas.
Yeah.
And they're like, can someone write the script? I'm like, yeah, I can handle that. And I'll do that. That sounds fun. But then I need to get a van and drive across the country. And I was in a hotel room in Colorado for a few days before we started that. And that Friday, I think we were getting ready to pack up and get in the car and go, because my wife's teaching job finally came to an end. And I got a DM from a friend, Giancarlo Valdez, who I've worked with a bunch. And he's like, man, congratulations on the move to Giant Bomb. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about? Can I swear? I'm sorry. I'm like, what are you talking? You okay. And he's like, oh, I saw it in the Dean article. I'm like, oh no, Dean. And so I go and I rush quick into the, thankfully I still had CMS access. And I'm like, I rush into the CMS and I delete it and I refresh the story. And then I'm like, Dean, I just meant you could say I was moving on, not where I was going. And then he just goes, oops. And then Mike Minotti, who's like, Dean is like a big character, but it's like Mike Minotti, who also works at GameSpeed, was just like a parting gift from Dean Takahashi. And of course, I think it's completely fair that I get scooped up on what I'm doing after my job. So I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to really complain, but it was very funny.
Yeah, that's really amazing. Imran, I didn't know that you'd seen it and then it got refreshed out of existence. That's
I'm like, how many people rate the Dean beat anyway? This is going to be fine.
It's totally fine. It's totally chill.
It's just like five sickos like me that are like, I wonder what Dean Takahashi is going to say this week.
It was on, there was a thread about it on Reset Era and it popped up on the Reddit for Giant Bomb. And like, but it was like those people saw it and then no one else did. I didn't really go too wide after that.
Yeah. Fair enough. Let's talk about some games. Let's do that. We got to see a 24-minute Nintendo Direct. Hilariously, Nintendo for a while uploaded a 45-minute version of it with nothing on it for a while. That was funny. We got to see a lot of this world. We got to see a lot of the mechanics, a bunch of characters. This game is really fucking big. I want to get into that. Imran, I'll start with you since, you know, this. I'm going to say this is your baby, Xenoblade Chronicles 3. Any big surprises from what we saw?
Not really. So, like, my initial report was that they were struggling with getting so many character models on screen. And, like, it appears their solution to that was, what if we just switch them out every so often? Like, yeah, that makes total sense. Like, I think a lot of people took my implication when I said that, took as an implication of like, oh yeah, they're waiting for a Switch Pro, which like maybe that was a thought at some point, who knows? But like, usually when developers run into that situation of, hey, what we're doing isn't working on this hardware, they make a design decision that's like, what if we do a thing that makes it seem like this is our decision the entire time?
Mm-hmm. It is impressive though. I mean, even for a Switch game, like it is, you know, it's like these Xenoblade games have always been kind of about scale and exploration and a lot of characters on the screen. It does seem like they're doing a better job with that. Although I did see some pretty major frame hitches in a couple sections, but that's fine. Yeah. It's no Pokemon, you know.
That game is going to run like it'll probably run fine, but run at a low resolution, which I'm expecting it to run basically like Xenoblade 2 does, but with more things happening at once.
Yeah. Jeff, do you like big games? How big is too big for you?
I like big games that let me just kind of wander off and find my own fun. Elden Ring really worked for me, and that felt like one of the biggest games that there is, period. I say I do like them. Xenoblade's never been one that I felt much of an interest to go check out myself. It's definitely falling into that, like, this looks like a lot of other games that have this art style and this influence. And so I'm like, because I can't tell them apart, I'm not going to like pay too much attention to this one. But the one thing I have heard that has enticed me is like that, like you said, it has a focus on scale, and people have always said that's really impressive. And I'm like, well, when I get around to it, that'd be nice to see. But this one, the video they showed for this, it was more compelling to me than Xenoblade has been in the past. It is the kind of thing where I'm like, I might check in on this if the people who are fans of these games come back and say, I think maybe there's a chance Jeff could like this. But You know, it helps that I didn't see too many swords with boobs.
yeah.
And so I won't be embarrassed if like my wife walks in watching me play this. So what is the take on that? Like, is that a, because I don't see the community like freaking out like vagina bones here, but maybe I'm just missing it. Were people, do you guys know vagina bones? I just say
that.
I'm
simpatico. That was not out of pocket. I totally get. Yes. I remember it well.
I talk about vagina bones like once a week. So I'm like,
we've all emerged from the vagina bones wars.
We have. I haven't seen anything that was like, I saw the most that was about one character with an American accent instead of all of them just sounding like bad dinner theater in London.
Right.
Like, so that was what I heard the most. I didn't see anything in this 24 minute thing that said, okay, they're going to do some sicko shit from the second one in this one.
I mean, there'll be something waifu related. Cause like they know 100%. That makes money. But I think they took the feedback from Xenoblade 2 of like, hey, you guys are actually getting kind of gross with this.
Yeah. Y'all went too fucking far.
There's a line.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like even Elden Ring kind of does the waifu thing here and there. I think most developers, sure. Most Japanese developers, I should say, tend to be like, well, this makes the game more marketable. How right. can we do that without hurting the actual reputation of the game?
Yeah. But you said something, Jeff, that I kind of agree with. I mean, I like these Xenoblade Chronicles games, and I like a lot of stuff that Monolith Soft has made, even though to your point, I've told the story a few times on the network. My mom did walk in on me playing Xeno Saga episode 3. My religious mother walked in when, the big titty robot was revealed right. to be Mary Magdalene.
Incredible.
And,
that's incredible.
It was, she was pretty appalled by that at the time. I remember that. So Monolith Soft has got a history. I like a lot of what they do, but I do think it all kind of bleeds together. It all kind of looks the same and has the same kind of footprint, and that works for a lot of people. It has it fatigues me a bit.
Yes,
but I am intrigued by how many characters there are that you can kind of control at once. It seems like a lot. You can shift in these like extra guest characters that you collect like Pokemon. It looks like they can join you, and that's kind of compelling. There's a lot of like classes that you could basically trade between your characters, which like I think is also cool. But then that started to fatigue me about like the scale of that in and of itself. So I don't know. I've just been thinking a lot about like how big is too big when I watch this stuff.
Mm. I mean, I still haven't finished Xenoblade 2, which is why like I'm not probably going to leap into Xenoblade 3.
Sure.
Because Xenoblade 2 is, one, it's very big, and two, the battle system is so complicated that I'm like 60 hours in, and I just realized that the reason every battle is taking 20 minutes is because I'm not doing it right. And like, I started learning how to do the battle system. Then the game crashed on me, and that game does not autosave. So
yeah.
I stopped playing after that for the last 9 months. So at some point I will go back to it, and I will have to relearn whatever the fuck I learned for the battle system. And then after that, then I will maybe get to Xenoblade 3. But just thinking about all of that is exhausting.
Speaking of missing mechanics, Imran, you may have missed this conversation yesterday, but did you know that Nikki played through the first few levels of Neon White and couldn't get past one of them because they just totally missed that there's an alternate fire that does your abilities?
Oh, no.
I mean, Nikki just like fucking missed that. It's like the first thing they tell you.
I mean, that happens, which is like it's a testament to why we get over tutorialized in a lot of games. Uh-huh.
Absolutely. Dean Takahashi did a review of Mass Effect or something like that, and never upgraded his character because he didn't know he could.
Yeah. So I didn't think that's the Dean Takahashi story you were going to tell.
There's lots of them, but yeah, that's the one I'm going to go with this time.
Like infamously, when I played Resident Evil 4 the first time, this is not like a major mechanic, but I didn't know you could run until the castle.
Oh, wow.
When you actually have to run at that point, otherwise you're just not going to make it.
Yeah.
So like because at that point in my life, I didn't. That was, I think, the first game I had played with an analog stick and a run button. Or maybe it wasn't, and maybe I just didn't conceive of it for some reason, but like you didn't need to do it, and I just never have to. And the game never tells you, hey, do this. I mean,
analog stick, the whole thing on the analog stick was like Mario, like the harder you press the stick, the faster it'll go. So if you need to walk, you just hold it halfway. Right. Like that was the whole thing. And then these developers were like, no, we're not doing that.
It's an influential game because now most games I feel like have some kind of run toggle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they do. All right, this thing's got a $30 expansion pass. I feel like the one for two did well.
People seem to like it from what I remember.
Thing I need to do before Xenoblade 3, I guess.
Yeah, right. It's like a prequel. It's like a big kind of meaty prequel, I think, to the original story. And the story content for Xenoblade 3 with this expansion pass goes through December 2023. That's beefy. That's like a little more than a year of content. So that feels right, I guess.
Yeah. Nintendo made so much money off the Smash Pass. Literally at an Inventor conference, they're like, we need to do more of this. We're really losing out by not having constant season passes that go for years. So I suspect we will see a lot more of that plan with more games than just like Xenoblade.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got to trick Nintendo into making money doing all kinds. Like, what if we put out good online and they make a ton of money? We should do this more. We just got to trick them.
I turned on my Switch Online last night to like, just, I wanted to load the N64 thing, and it does does that hidden block thing where it's like, we're going to reveal all the games to you. Yes. There are 5 blocks. I'm like, wait, what did I miss? Because I thought the only game that I needed was Pokemon Snap. And then it does Pokemon Snap Spanish, Pokemon Snap German, Pokemon Snap French, Pokemon Snap English. Like, okay, great. And they're all there and you can't get rid of any of them. So I just have like 5 versions of Pokemon Snap.
I didn't realize those were different SKUs. That's incredible. That's amazing. All right, let's move on. We also got the Final Fantasy 16 devs did a bit of an interview circuit this week. What's that like? we did get some cool little morsels. Apparently, those giant icon battles will feature different gameplay styles. Are y'all excited to play Rock'em Sock'em Robots with these big monsters?
Yes.
Yeah.
The pro wrestling one that they just name dropped.
Hell yeah.
As if that's not like a thing that instantly made me like, huh? What?
Uh-huh.
That's the one because that seems like the right kind of stupid. Final Fantasy should be more stupid. It takes itself too seriously. And I like the idea that they're already like, what if we just didn't take it seriously? What if this was not like an epic Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones mashup calibre thing? It just says someone rings a bell and then Bahamut and a Titan like wrestle each other.
Yeah, that was my concern when I first like saw it. Like, it's like they've been watching Game of Thrones and that's what they're making. And that happens with Final Fantasy frequently. Like, they were watching the prequels and then we got Final Fantasy 12 and then, you know, they were watching Game of Thrones. So now this is what we're getting. It was just kind of my line of thinking. But then I don't think that it's not that simplistic. The game that they are showing off now, it looks like they have a bunch of ideas and they are very excited about those ideas. And so I'm like, okay. I always get up and out of bed for any developer who's like declaring loudly that they have a vision. And so I'm like, okay, if that's the case here, I'm going to be paying attention. The big wrestling sequence. I mean, they had like life bars and stuff. It looked like a fighting game. Like, there's some cool stuff happening there. I'm like, I got to see how this plays. Recent Final Fantasy games have definitely had a lot going on in terms of gameplay being very good. So I'm going to tune in for this and kind of see how it's going.
Yeah. It's weird that Square Enix seems to be firing on all cylinders internally now. Like, they did that statement a couple of months ago when they sold off Crystal Dynamics and the rest of them. It was like, we're going to focus on our internal development. It's like, I'm trying to think of a non-terrible analogy for this that does not offend everyone, but like, it genuinely feels like they have gotten free of a lot of their shackles because some of the worst shit they've put out has been from their Western sides and from external publishing partners. So like, that I'm actually massively excited for the things they've announced recently, like 7 Remake and the 14 stuff and 16. Like,
right, there is no like Left Alive. There is no Balan Wonderworld. At least that we know of that they have announced that they're like, hey, look out for these. The Quiet Man 2 is on its way. It seems like they've like gotten past whatever that initiative was. Like, let's put out the worst games of the year every year. Like, that's our plan. We're the producers, everybody. But like, I'm like, there's clear successes happening in Final Fantasy, and they are doubling down. Like, they couldn't be doubling down harder on Final Fantasy VII if they tried. Like, they are, like, it's all Final Fantasy VII all the time. Yeah. And then we have those leaks about Final Fantasy Tactics Remake and Final Fantasy IX Remake. It's like, so they know what works. They're following maybe a slight, a slightly modified version of the Capcom playbook of double down on the games that are selling, do even more of that. And that, I mean, that's good, because Square Enix needed that guidance, because they were lost in the woods with a lot of stuff that wasn't called Final Fantasy 14 for a long time there.
Yeah. Which I think does is maybe a testament to how long it takes for a big publisher to actually write the ship. Like, it's not everyone. This is not, you know, because I was one of these people, but like, people on message boards think if they just did this, this, and this, then like they'd be a fantastic publisher. But when you have like 5,000 employees and multiple things, projects in the works that take years to make, it must be actually very, very difficult to go, okay, here's what our next phase looks like. Because most of what we've seen from Square Enix in the last 5 to 7 years was decided in one weekend retreat, where a bunch of executives sat together in like the woods and like decided what, okay, we're going to do a Final Fantasy VII remake. This is what FF15 is going to look like these kind of things. So it does take a very long time for
the boxes in the closet get ignored for a long time. You have to go like actually get your hands on that stuff. And you're right. It's very easy just to let the ship continue on the path. I mean, the big ship metaphor absolutely works. It's a big, heavy thing that is moving under its own momentum. And to change that requires the input of a lot of external energy. And that always that you need to know like where to apply that energy. And that takes that's a long fact finding process. So, I'm hopeful for a competent Square Enix again. I would love Sega to maybe like, hey, can we get our stuff together too? Look around, maybe try some of this stuff, Sega, once in a while. But at least it does show that there is a path forward or a path back from seemingly being lost.
Yeah, I think it is interesting in it, and honestly a testament to Square Enix. I'm going to put their machinations to get into Web3 stuff aside. I'm going to just put that out aside the room for a second and say, you know, they're maybe one of the easiest armchair quarterback developers to actually fix, but like it's a testament to them that they kind of decided to just do a lot of that stuff, which, you know, it's like, how long have we been talking about Final Fantasy VII, you know, a remake or just doubling down on a lot of the stuff? And yeah, it's cheap and yeah, it's easy, but now they've done it and they did it in maybe the most spectacularly effective and good way possible. And it's kind of a shock to me that Remake was as good as it was. Imran and I talked about that a lot on another podcast this week. But it's like they seem to kind of get it. Who knows what this Web3 shit they want to do will be. But I mean,
they keep talking about it.
Do you think it's boardroom bullshit, or do you think they really have ideas? I don't think
it is just boardroom bullshit, because if it was just boardroom bullshit, or at least they don't know that, like, the investors don't care about this at this moment right now. At this moment, they actually don't want to be hearing about NFTs, because anyone that's invested in NFTs in that group is like knows that they're, you know, NFTs or crypto of any kind. They're taking a beating. They don't want a reminder like that someone's trying something here. They sort of want to forget about it. So either Square Enix thinks this is still what investors want to hear and is wrong about that, or there is a legitimate interest in making something happen, which I think is in line with that New Year's holiday card that CEO sent out, or the president sent out. Because it's like unforced errors. You don't have to keep talking about it. You don't have to keep saying it. And the way that they phrase it, like, it's too early to be talking about doing NFT games for Dragon Quest and Final Fantasy. I'm like, well, yeah, like, that's a terrible idea. You should never do that. Why are you saying it's too early to even do that? But you know, maybe I'm just reading and like I might be connecting the dots here, and really they are just like saying this stuff for investors' sake.
Yeah. I mean, I think they genuinely like the idea of, because like they love the idea of a store that they control and make money off every single transaction. And if people are trading creating their own economy where everything feeds up to them, then I think they will happily leap on board.
And they've said it. They've said as much in the past. Like, they've said that exact line of reasoning why they like it.
Yeah, and like the blockchain gives them the actual security to make sure it doesn't become like a free for all cheating, people replicating whatever as they need to or need or want, but also, everyone hates it. So it's very hard to thread that needle. And especially, like, I think it's very confusing for them because culturally in Japan, it's not considered a, like, they're not necessarily happy about it, but also right, but it, they don't care. They don't see it as the end of the world. Right. I was talking to some Japanese developers at GDC and they were saying like, there's actually a lot of really interesting things we could do with this. Like we could actually make digital games sellable and stuff like that, which they can do now. They just don't. But like they are not against the idea of blockchain Web3 NFT stuff. They have concerns, especially environmental ones, but the further up the chain you go, the environmental concerns get less and less impressing.
If they do Web3, just make it so that I can buy a Web3 version of any 2D Square Enix game with better font, and that's fine. Like that's all I need. All right, so Final Fantasy 16, they're kind of eschewing open world design to do this kind of open zone thing. Is that kind of a shock to either of you, or is this kind of in line with what you'd expect from this team?
I think this goes in line with what I was saying earlier about them having a vision. And like the reason you do open world, if you're Final Fantasy in the past, I think is because that's what gamers want. And that's what like can look good on the back of the box and in the commercials. And it just looks like, oh, there's going to be all this stuff to explore. But that's like... That needs to then be the impetus behind the gameplay mechanics, and that was never really they were never putting that peanut butter and jelly together at Square Enix. So right. I think putting that the need to come up with an open world game that is compelling to play aside, what do you want a Final Fantasy adventure to be? Well, right. You do want it to be this grand world traveling thing where like you are you're going to set out on an adventure and it's going to take you to places you didn't expect and they're going to be big and scary. And then when you accomplish your goal there, you're going to realize, well, we need to actually go to this place. And then at the end of the story, you're going to probably wrap back home and things are going to be different and all the characters are going to be different and they're going to feel different about the world that they left behind. Like it just fits with the kind of thing that they're trying to do here so much better.
Yeah.
That it once again gives me a lot of confidence about this game specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking to a Japanese developer who, actually, they make very famous action games. And they were telling me they were working on a prototype for a game where the initial pitch was, this is going to be an open world action title. And they worked on it for years with that same prototype over and over and over. And the problem kept coming up. They didn't know how to control the pacing. Because the second you let people just do whatever they want, they get bored doing the same like repetitive action or fighting the same enemies and all that. And controlling the pacing was so incredibly important for how they play this game. That doesn't mean it can't work. It obviously does work in games like Horizon and God of War and recently Elden Ring. But if you're making a certain kind of game like a Devil May Cry or a Bayonetta or something, going just like, let's just make this open world is such a hard switch to flip because that changes just basically everything about the design.
It didn't even really work in Nier Automata. Like it's the open world stuff was not the best part of that game by a long shot. And it was the kind of thing where it's like, if I start trying to go find my own fun here, I will find nothing. I'll get bored. I need to just stay on this crit path and see what they put in front of me.
Yeah. Right. It is the definition of open world kind of getting fuzzy to either of y'all? Cause it is to me.
Yeah, definitely. Cause we have like, Sonic Frontiers talk about open zone stuff and it's clearly just an open world, but it's like slightly open spaces. The thing is that the scale is continuing to grow and grow and grow.
Right.
And that's both like in terms of a square footage, it's growing and it's growing in terms of density.
Yeah.
And then the possibilities in that space are also growing. It's like this three dimensional growth that is making it so that these games can be bigger and deeper than ever before. And yet at the same time, we still kind of get open world games that are the equivalent to GTA 3 or something to this day. So now there's this genre we call open world games and it's just this massive open possibility space of what that could possibly mean. So yeah, it's getting way more fuzzy.
Yeah. Like Saints Row is making it a marketing point that, hey, we're making open world games like there used to be open world games that are just kind of like non-linear. You can cause whatever mayhem you want. Just go to the mission when you're done.
Just go to the waypoint when you're done. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. So open sandbox versus open world. I feel like that's a bit of a maybe better distinction, but the stuff is getting fuzzy. Like I'm still looking at a lot of, the gameplay snippets we're seeing for Final Fantasy 16 and kind of, screenshots. And I'm like, okay, we're going to probably split hairs on whether this is open world or not until this game is even out. So I don't know.
It's so it's funny to me they're just not saying the words Breath of the Wild. They're trying so hard not to say those, even though it's like so obvious. It's guy walks in with a mustache, is like, what's with the mustache? He's just refusing to acknowledge it. Like, why aren't you saying anything about it?
It's not that surprising because, you know, it's very biased, but it's like my favorite game ever. But it is amazing how much Breath of the Wild has just fucked people up for the past like 6 years. What do we say? What do we do about anything?
I mean, it's so tight. Like, you never know if you're talking to like a weird fanboy who's like, it's not on their system, so that's why they won't have this conversation.
Right.
Or someone who's just legitimately tired of having that same point brought up over and over, which is like, okay, fair, but that's
also
what's happening. Yeah. What are we supposed to do here?
I was working at Game Informer when Breath of the Wild came out, and like all the studio visits I would do at like within the year of that game coming out was just people in like their little studio cubicles playing Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
They're going to meetings, being like, okay, I just had this idea based on this game.
Yes. I mean, Nintendo does it. It's going to like shake people up, shake them loose, and like make them think, okay, if they're doing this and they're doing it in a way that feels very Nintendo,
yeah,
we what excuse do we have to like not do it ourselves and make it our own as well? It happened. It was a lightning rod, and I get people not wanting to talk about it, but it is what happened. It is just factual history at this point.
Yeah. I am curious what game next year is going to be that. Because it could be Breath of the Wild 2. It could be Starfield. It could be like any number of games that are just like that actually does the we're setting the new standard for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. I'm very excited to see what that is. All right. We just got all of Jeff's big announcements and showcases and all of that stuff. Imran, I think you and I met up about 2 months ago to talk about winter of this year. I am no more clear on what I will be playing this winter now than I was 2 months ago. I mean, I know there's going to be Pokemon. I know there's going to be Call of Duty. I know there are going to be a couple of big games. There's whispers of God of War hitting November. How are we feeling about God of War in November?
I suspect we will find out about God of War before the end of the month.
Yes.
There are
some leaks to that effect, I believe.
Yeah. I'm going to guess that, like, that game will hit this winter. Nothing they've shown has been like, this is not a knock on God of War in any way, but monstrously ambitious like the first game was, which is why would you reinvent the wheel? So like I suspect, that game will probably hit this year. But besides that, like, I expected way more things to be announced this year.
Did you guys see like the list of games coming for October from Benji Sales? He posted this and I'm like, okay, that's kind of substantial. I'll just read it real quick. If none of these games get delayed, they'll all come out in October. Marvel's Midnight Suns, Forspoken, A Plague Tale Requiem, Persona 5 Royal for PS5, Xbox, and PC, Scorn, Gotham Knights, High on Life, and Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2. Like, that's like...
It's a list of mids. I don't mean to be mean about that, because, like, I'm sure some of those games are going to be fucking sick, but, like... none of them are on my radar as like, oh shit, fuck yeah.
Yes.
This is a weird coda to the Square Enix stuff, but it's weird how they just kind of like forgot about Forspoken.
Yeah.
Like they've been announcing so much interesting shit, they have not marketed that game at all.
Well, I mean, it's shown up in a lot of state of plays, and I think they're like, that's all right. Done.
That's it.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
No one's convinced that what that game really is or how to play it.
Yeah.
And it's like they're not recognizing what is happening there, which is like when a game shows up repeatedly in a showcase and it's still not creating buzz. That's a big problem, actually.
Yeah.
People are unsure.
I assume that's what the delay was about. But we're a few months away and they've not really. I guess they still have some time. But
yeah.
Right. We'll do you think like that, you know, where we've alluded to like a possibility here about God of War Ragnarok later this month? Do you think that's like a full state of play where there's a bunch of other announcements in there as well? Because it seems like there's probably room for that to happen.
They've not done a first party state of play.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they usually save those for September.
Yes. The showcases.
Yeah. I don't see a reason they wouldn't this time. Like maybe Vic do a God of War focus one and then a showcase
with September.
Spider-Man 2 and like updates on the games. And then the thing they do of the CG announcement trailers. That seems the most likely thing. I also suspect there's going to be a Nintendo Direct sometime in the next couple of days. Within the next week, I'm guessing.
And at that one, I'm not sure either if it's like a third party, a partner. Like there's the things I've heard making me think like, I haven't heard anything about first party stuff for that thing. And I'm like, there's still a lot of first party stuff they need to announce. But things I've heard make it sound like it could just be a partner showcase or a mini direct or something like that. So I'm still unsure about that as well.
Yeah. So like maybe Sony's also being like, we want the news cycle to ourselves. Let's let's hold that off for a bit.
Yeah. And God of War Ragnarok could stand on its own. No problem there.
Yeah. That game is going to sell great and be critically hailed no matter when it comes out or no matter how much marketing they do for it either.
Right. And I don't want to be a brat and be like, well, there are no games coming out in the winter, because honestly, this year has been quietly a fucking banger for games. It's been real good. Like, I mean, even just in the past week, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Neon White, like two really good games I'd probably slot into my top 10 right now if you made me. So it's like, it's not, I'm not complaining. It's just an odd, it's just an observation I'm making as someone who watches this pretty closely, that it feels later than ever that I have not gotten a good sense of a big AAA game that I can curl up with on Christmas morning, which is like a goofy thing to still want, I guess, but it is a thing I think about a lot.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it's pandemic, but a lot of it is you know, Activision and EA don't make mini games anymore.
Nope,
and you look around and it's like, okay, well then who fills in that gap? Embracer Group is not at a point where we can reliably expect them to put out really big games anytime soon. Like maybe they get to that point in the future. And honestly, Xbox is still in that same boat where it's like they've been trying to make that transition and they've put out a lot of games that were like exclusive to PlayStation because of those old deals.
Yep.
And if those were coming out to Xbox, people would probably be like, oh, Xbox did have a few games, but they weren't able to do that. And so they're still kind of reloading and we're waiting to see if they're going to be able to pick up that pace. And Sony has got God of War Ragnarok and Forspoken, a few other things that they're going to want to talk about. But beyond that, they're like, we need to sell God of War Ragnarok. We'll talk about the other stuff later. Yeah. So we just don't know. We just don't know what's coming. And this year feels maybe a little bit lighter than what it might actually end up being.
Plus, there's been some weird upheaval, like with so much of the Yakuza team going to NetEase. Yeah. There should have been a Yakuza game this year. Like they have outright said, hey, we're making Yakuza 8. Like it is a game that is coming. The fact that it's not coming this year, I think, is not intended. I think they had all intentions of making it this year and it's just not ready.
And I think that you know, there was a lot of people that were coming up in that studio that could probably are taking over that franchise, but it doesn't mean that a transition like that would have been like easy or smooth to pull off. And, you know, you got to replenish that talent. And that's not easy in any market across the world right now.
Yeah. So true. So true. I think this has been a great talk. I've been really, really enjoyed it. I think we'll probably leave it there. It's about time for me to pick up Air Twister on my iPhone and play it for the rest of the day. Because
are you guys going to get Into the Breach through Netflix on your phones? Because I am. I don't know. I haven't played any games through Netflix, but I'm going to.
I've not yet either. I played with the what's the Point P? I did the Point P.
Point P.
And that setup process was annoying. So I don't know, but we'll see.
I think I was at, like, I was flying to LA when they announced that or something. Yeah. And I was like, I wasn't getting all the details. So I was like, people were saying, oh, you can play this on Netflix. So in my head, I thought it was I could launch the Netflix app on a PS5 or something and play
it. Sure, right.
Which I think should be the way they do it.
But sure. If it's a platform, it's a platform.
PlayStation's not going to let them do that, right?
No, they're not. PlayStation
won't let them do that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely not.
Yeah, but it's like it's a confusing set of marketing that Netflix has got right now. But Into the Breach getting a resurgence is actually pretty great. That game is very good. If you've not played it, feels like a good time to get into it. You've got a lot of catching up to do with Danielle Riondo's literal 2,300 hours of that game played.
A true sicko.
I mean, that is fucking ridiculous.
I don't think incredible. I've played any one game that long. I've played a lot of games a very long time.
I will say I've played NFL 2K5 on the Xbox a lot, but it has not been for 2,300 hours.
Yep. No way.
No way. Imran, of course, thank you for joining.
Thank you.
You can find Imran at Imran, Z-O-M-G, over on twitter.com. I have to say that for Natalie Flores, who will be listening to this. Imran's
also in my Twitter profile, you'll notice it says number one game journalist.
It does say
God
that.
Damn it.
Yeah. It does say that, Jeff.
Damn you.
So what are you going to do about it?
I'm going to come for this man.
Until then, I think you are required to put number three game journalist.
Yeah, I'll get it in there. Sorry about that.
You can, of course, follow Jeff Grubb at Jeff Grubb and, of course, find him over on, I almost said GameSpot. That's not right. Giant Bomb.
Apparently, I'm going to be writing for GameSpot too. I'm just waiting for Cam to do his job and tell me how to do that.
Honestly, I was going to ask that question. You know, if you're itching to put your writing somewhere, but that kind of answers that question. That's good.
It's like the kind of thing where it's like, if I have some news stories and I have time to like write them before we go to do a show.
Got to get those traffic bombs, those grub bombs.
Yeah,
of course.
Exactly. I'll help out with that. Now, there is the occasional time where like, I need to write this down to explain to everybody why they're wrong about something.
Sure.
And I'll do that there as well. We'll see.
Well, that's good to know. Anything else you want to plug?
No, just that I really like Fanbyte, guys. I think you guys do great work. I love the vibe, the building of an audience, the way that you guys are approaching it is something I really am envious of and think that you guys do a great job at. So,
That's very sweet.
Just keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. It's been lovely having you. You're welcome back here anytime. And thanks, folks. Go get Air Twister right now. I'm required to say that because I don't know. I entered into some dark contract with Yu Suzuki years ago. Goodbye.
I love how every article about that game has, we weren't allowed to talk about Shenmue.
Oh, God. God bless Shenmue. A quick interruption of the show to tell you about another podcast on the network that I love very much. It's called You Love to See It. It is a weekly movie and TV show podcast, and it's hosted by Danielle Riondo and Fernanda Praches as they open their own video store, folks, and they're trying to decide what to fill the shelves with and what to throw in the dumpster behind the building. This month is all about Join Us June. Yeah, that's right. It's movies about cults. They watched Midsommar. They watched The Mouth of Madness. And this week, they watched The Master, a 2012 film directed by Paul Thomas Anderson. It's got Philip Seymour Hoffman in it. And it is, it's not light viewing, but it is an important film of the 21st century. And they talked all about it with a special guest, Alexander K. Lee from MMAFighting.com. It's a really great episode and a really great podcast. You can listen to it every Monday over at fanbyte.com/podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again to Jeff Grubb and Imran Khan. That was a really lovely conversation. It was nice to have a chill convo with some good people the morning I recorded that. That was nice. I needed that. So thank you both. Like I said, we covered a lot of news in that sequence, and we'll probably mostly leave it there. I will do a little bit of cleanup. We did mention that Into the Breach gets a free update upcoming, and they've got a mobile version coming to Netflix, which is very interesting. The Sonic Origins game has got a lot of bugs that the devs are not super happy about. The folks that made Sonic Mania have actually tweeted publicly about Sega's decision in the intake process of, you know, basically them handing the finished game to publishing. Apparently a lot of bugs have opened up and a lot of weird choices have been made by Sega, the publisher, and not the developers of Sonic Origins, which is pretty interesting. And also the music of Sonic 3 is different, which hilariously prompted Yuji Naka, who worked on the Sonic series very closely for many, many years, to tweet the following, quote, "Oh my God, the music for Sonic 3 has changed, even though Sega official uses Michael Jackson's music," which seems to confirm a long rumored thing that had never been confirmed, that Michael Jackson composed the music for Sonic 3. He just tweeted it out. Incredible. Sega is, saying that there are some bugs that they need to fix, obviously, in this game. And I'm sure that they will. But it is interesting that the Sonic Origins folks are tweeting so publicly about what is apparently a publisher-born issue with bugs and problems in the shipped title. Okay, I mentioned at the very top of the show that we are recording the bulk of this on Friday the 24th. This morning, Roe versus Wade was struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court. that has some cascading effects. Clarence Thomas, one of the judges on the Supreme Court, has said that it's now time to go after the laws that uphold protections for extramarital sex, for same-sex sex, as well as access to contraception. So he has basically just laid out what's coming next, what they will actively look at to possibly strike down and stop federal protections for these things that seem so common sense and right to protect that, of course, it is causing a lot of unrest right now. And the other cascading effect is, of course, state-specific abortion bans. Some of them are triggered instantaneously as of this morning. Some of them have a 30-day span in which they will automatically take place after that 30 days. And then some trigger bans will be kind of forced through some legislation within the state legislations of note. I live in Arkansas, in a state where that will have to be triggered and go through a certain process within the state government before it becomes official. But it is something that they will probably get started on right away. So what do we do? So some game companies are speaking out, notably the studios connected to Sony, who were basically told not to speak out about things like this, have started to come out about this in droves. Insomniac made a statement that said reproductive freedom and bodily autonomy are human rights. Naughty Dog also joined that conversation. And as did PlayStation London, sending their support from over the pond. Media Molecule did the same thing. They, of course, are behind Little Big Planet and Dreams. They said reproductive freedom and bodily autonomy are human rights. Sucker Punch, the folks that made Ghost of Tsushima, said the same thing. And Santa Monica Studio also tweeted out basically the same thing. It said Santa Monica Studio will continue to uphold these values and support our team members in receiving access to the care they need. So this affects a lot of American studios and American workers, obviously. But, you know, of course, it's bigger than the games industry. Of course. If you're overwhelmed by the idea of trying to track down the best abortion fund to give locally, first of all, give an effort. Look at maybe what your local abortion fund is. There's the Arkansas Abortion Support Network. That's my local abortion fund. You can probably find this fairly easily. But if you are overwhelmed by this, if it's unclear, if you're not sure which is the best to do, there is a national network of abortion funds and a link that you can use. It is secure.actblue.com/donate/support abortion funds. That is secure.actblue.com/donate/support abortion funds. This is a way to basically split one donation across 92 recipients across the country that will help support people who need reproductive care. And that is a good link to have. And remember, we'll also put that in the show notes. I highly, highly suggest that you get involved. If you are going to go protest or anything like that, please be careful. It is a scary time right now in this country. It has me despairing on a almost weekly basis for one reason or another. I do believe in our ability to support each other and to love each other. But that belief is being tested constantly. I know our community is behind these sentiments and supportive of each other and supportive of these rights. So that's never been an issue. I love talking to our community about these things because I know they care about it. They're good people, and I'm glad that they're a part of my day to day. I'll leave it there. We'll talk about some upcoming games this coming week in the next segment. But this has been a trying day as we're recording all of this. And I couldn't help but just kind of make this conversation about that. So I appreciate you taking the time to listen to me and be patient. We'll probably get back to whatever normal looks like next week. But yeah, let's talk about some stuff that's coming out this coming week. Heyo, let's talk about some of the very cool games that are coming out this week. There are some bangers, and we'll get you to early July with this week's action. So let's start with June 28th. We've got Disgaea 6 Complete. That's the complete version of that game. PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, and PC. Again, that's June 28th. DNF Duel is coming to the same platforms, PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, and PC on June 28th. And Escape Academy, a game we've talked about a few times on the show. Excited about it. PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, and PC. That's also June 28th. And Phobia, that's with an F. Saint Dinfana Hotel. Tough name for that game. Comes to PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, and PC. Also, rounding up June 28th, we've got MX versus ATV Legends. Coming to PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, and PC. The very, very hotly anticipated final DLC of Cuphead, The Delicious Last Course. Hey, Delicious Last Course, it stands for DLC. That comes to PS4, Xbox One, Switch, and PC on June 30th. Another big one is the Outriders World Slayer expansion that comes to PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, PC, and Stadia, of course, on June 30th. And then maybe the biggest release, especially probably around these parts here at Fanbyte, Monster Hunter Rise Sunbreak is coming to Switch and PC on June 30th. We will have a ton of coverage of that game up on the site, so get ready for that. And on July 1st, hey, that's my birthday, we've got F1 22, the brand new F1 game. I think producer Paul Tamayo will have some thoughts about that game coming up this week on the website. So be on the lookout for that. That game is coming to PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, and PC on July 1st. That's really all we got. FIFA 22 is coming. Nope. Is it 22? I think it's FIFA 22. Did I make that up? I'm going to look this up live. I think FIFA 22 Game Pass, FIFA 22. I think I made this up. No, I didn't make this up. I did not at all make this up. FIFA 22 is one of the only new games that has been added to Xbox Game Pass, aside from, basically everything announced at the showcase, which is not coming out till much later. But FIFA 22 was added to Xbox Game Pass last week. So it was added on June 23rd. So you should be able to play that right now on Xbox Game Pass. We will know probably July's big Xbox Game Pass stuff, probably for next week's show. We're probably like one or two days early as I'm recording this, to see the full slate. So I will be back next week with a full list. And, that's what can, get you through the next week. Some really nice stuff. That Monster Hunter Sunbreak thing, I think, is going to be pretty good. So definitely keep an eye out for that. All right, folks. Happy video gaming. That's going to do it for this week's show. I definitely want to thank my two guests, Imran Khan and Jeff Grubb, for stopping by talking to me about some video games during this tough time. You can find Imran over at Imran ZOMG on Twitter. Of course, you can find all of his wonderful writing over at fanbyte.com. For Jeff Grubb, you can find him at Jeff Grubb. That's Grubb with two B's over at twitter.com. You can also find him at Giant Bomb. He's got a show called Morning Game. Oops, no. Game Mess Morning. Good Lord. Game Mess Mornings is really delightful. It's a fun little news show. He hosts with someone else to talk about news. It's not unlike this show, and he's really good at it. So Giant Bomb's great. That new crew that they've assembled, it's not all that new, but it's basically a codified crew of nine, is great. They're doing some really great work, so you should definitely go check out Giant Bomb when you get a chance. If you want to follow my excellent producer, Paul Tamayo, you can do so over at PaulieMayo on Twitter.com. You can also check out all of our other podcasts at fanbyte.com/podcasts. We will have little blog posts for every single one of our shows with transcripts and some notes and things. That's something that we're doing for every show now. You've probably noticed that we were doing that for Thanks for the Knowledge. We've been doing that for a few weeks. Now it'll be every show, so I'm really excited about that. You can find me at Floppy Adult on Twitter. We'll leave it there. Please be safe. Probably a lot of protests happening, have already happened this past weekend. It probably will happen this week. Take care of each other and yourselves. And be safe out there. And until next week, you're welcome.